Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the City of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo!
You should have been pulled in the front room, they have faith in you. You should have been pulled.
Hello and welcome everyone to a Palazzo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Two L's, two Z's. I'm your host today, Britton Allen, and I can't believe it. It's unbelievable. I've got a very special guest today, the executive producer and co-host of the wildly successful Fantasy Baseball Podcast called Rates and Barrels. You may have heard of it. I don't know. Eno Saris and my guest, Derek Van Riper, go and podcast every day about all things baseball and fantasy baseball. If for some reason you haven't heard it, please go check it out. But thank you so much for being here, Derek. How are you doing, man?
Doing great, Britton. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, I met you and I had the pleasure of meeting you in Arizona. I went to First Pitch Arizona last year, and you were kind enough to come to our Palazzo podcast recording on a Saturday night, I believe. It was rather controversial, as I recall. Lots of debauched behavior going, not by you. I want to make that clear. It was otherwise debauched, and I won't name names, Justin Mason. But we had a great time on the whole, and we got out of there apparently unscathed. But you were really nice because after the podcast was over, you came up and you were had so many kind things, nice, complimentary things to say about us and the podcast. It really made an impression because I was like, this is a gentleman. Like, this is a true Midwesterner who believes in like respectfulness and kindness to everyone he meets. Or does he? Because ladies and gentlemen, here on the Palazzo podcast, we believe and always telling the truth, unless we're lying, which we typically are. But other than that, we always tell the truth. And I have come to find out there is a secret life of Derek Van Riper. Shall we say secret as in dark and scandalous secrets? Much like the book Heart of Darkness, every man has the light in the dark, the Anakin, the Darth Vader, and unfortunately, our good friend DVR is no different. But unlike Heart of Darkness, which takes place in the African Congo, DVR's story takes place on a cool, crisp autumn afternoon in Mesa, Arizona. Our story begins with a young baseball fan, a six-year-old boy with glasses, a used baseball cap, and a used baseball glove, two sizes too big because they were hand-me-downs all his family could afford. But the little boy's dream was to go to an Arizona Fall League game, watch his favorite superstar prospects, and perhaps, just perhaps, catch a foul ball and keep it as a souvenir that he would treasure for the rest of his life. And as luck would have it, a foul ball was indeed hit to his section. And with joy in his heart, he raced to the spot where it landed. But as our young hero ran, he noticed in the corner of his eye, someone else was running for the ball. In fact, a full-grown man, foaming at the mouth, with burning red eyes and an angry glare. It was a close race to the foul ball. And just when our six-year-old hero reaches to grab his little teeny hand to the ball, he was body checked to the ground. Glasses flew off, hat and gloves straight up in the cool blue sky. And our hero laid on the ground. Meanwhile, this crazed jackal of a man picks up the ball, yells, "Victory!" Steps over the boy as he walks away. And my question to you, Mr. Derek Van Riper, who was that man?
Well, that's what everybody else saw. Your description of the account of events seems to align with every other person who's a witness to the incident, including there was a vendor selling Arizona Fall League merchandise down on the concourse. And I thought at the time that she was the only witness of the event, but she gave me the look of death. She gave me the look of, "You're a grown man. That's a kid. Why did you have the ball?" Because all she saw was me slowly running into frame and this kid running much faster than me, trying to catch up to me and being a step short of getting a Bryce Harper foul ball. It's just fun, right? And the Fall League's amazing. It's the opportunity, if you've been to 20 games in your life and you've never gotten a foul ball, or 100 games, how many games you've been to, if you've never gotten a foul ball, go to the Fall League. There's a very good chance you will get a foul ball. Unfortunately, Bryce Harper will never hit a foul ball in the Arizona Fall League again. I think we can say that with a lot of confidence. So I have one of the very few. It's one of my most prized possessions. And it's amazing because without all the eyewitnesses who could speak to how terrible I am for outrunning the ball, it's not authenticated. Like there's it's only like a legend, basically, to people that know about it. So I just hope that the ball brings me more joy in my remaining years than it ever would have given that child.
Of course, my telling of the story was slightly more melodramatic than actual occurrences, but let's not let the truth get in the way of a very, very overly dramatic story. But I remember you telling that story in Arizona. First pitch, and it cracked me up. But we do have some other DVR deep dark secrets that we'll get to later. But before we get to that, I would like to hit up some news, because here we are, the DVR, in the dog days of summer. It's kind of like, you know, you got to a third of the fantasy season is over, and it's kind of like, my team's in 10th place. What, things aren't going right. I drafted Ronald Acuna, but baseball moves on every day. So, and hope springs eternal, as Alexander Pope says. So we're just one pickup away from getting that player that'll change the fortune of everybody's team. Is that player Connor Norby of the Baltimore Orioles? Got called up to take the place of Jorge Mateo. What do you think, DVR? Is he our savior?
I don't think so. I've played the game long enough, though, where there have been some very unexpected developments. There have been players who've come up in the first half of the season with pretty limited fanfare, guys who were prospects but not necessarily elite of the elite prospects, and they've found a way to carve out an everyday role and be early round picks, right? I mean, I think Matt McClain this time last year around his call up, we didn't necessarily have expectations that Matt McClain was going to be as good as he was, right? So I think if you set the ceiling at a place like that and say, we know he has to do this quickly, Connor Norby has to perform at a level quickly to show the Orioles that he is a better option than more than one player, right? The Mateo injury opened the door, but he's got to hold off Jackson Holliday. They've got so many other pieces they can move around that it's like a constant battle for playing time. Heston Kerstead has learned that the hard way, right? He was on the roster not playing for a long stretch before going back to AAA. So I think the problem with Norby in the short term, even though he's playing regularly for now upon being promoted, is that he's going to have to play his way to a more prominent spot in the order also in order to be that sort of pickup. So a nice pickup, a guy that can contribute maybe in all five categories, certainly worth consideration down to at least 12 team leagues, but very uncertain playing time. And then I look at the strikeout rate at AAA. It jumped up to 30.7% this year. The level he was repeating, he spent all of last year at that same level. I don't know if that's an automated balls and strikes related problem, a situation where Norby was maybe more aggressive, just trying to earn that promotion, trying to hit a 3-run homer with nobody on base every chance he had, right? Like there's different explanations for it, but that's the only little skills thing that kind of caught me by surprise when Norby got the call from Norfolk.
Yeah, he's very intriguing. I wonder if they're like frenemies, you know, like Connor Norby, Mayo, and Jackson Holliday. Like, you know, they're all trying to get up into the big leagues and stay in the big leagues. And I know Mayo's hurt, but it looks like he's coming back a little bit. And so now Connor Norby, who is probably the least heralded of those three, I would say. And let's not forget, you've also got Kyle Stowers in the mix and Heston Kerstead in the mix. I mean, this is like Lord of the Rings. Like, you know, they're all trying to kill each other to get that seashell or whatever they were doing on that island. But Connor Norby hit a home run in his debut, so you know he's going to be good, right? Isn't that what always happens? If he hits a home run in his debut, he's guaranteed success. I'm like 95% sure that's true.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I wouldn't run a StatHead search to verify that. I would just assume that you're right.
He's definitely worth a shot, though, because it looks like he's going to play second base every day while Jorge Mateo. Man, that was a freak injury. I really like Jorge Mateo. You know, he was a big-time prospect for the A's, and that didn't work out. So now he's trying to work it out with the O's. And did you see what happened? It's like Cedric Mullins was taking a practice swing, and for some reason Jorge Mateo went to pick something up and got – it didn't look like that big a deal, but – you can tell his reaction when he was in the dugout. It was a big deal, like a real big deal. It was really sad. So I hope Mateo takes his time, not for Norby, just because concussions and how serious that is. So, but it looks like Connor Norby is going to play second base while Jorge Mateo's out. So maybe go grab him while he's hot. Another guy I wanted to ask you about, Justin Henry Molloy. He came out. He's been up for a couple of days now. He took, Torkelson's spot on the active roster. Justin Henry Molloy, by all accounts, A-plus dude, A-plus person, wonderful human being, kind of middle-of-the-road baseball player. I don't know. What do you think? Have you had a chance to look at Justin Henry Molloy for the Tigers?
Yeah, so I've been interested in Molloy for a couple of seasons now, just because initially when the Tigers acquired him from Atlanta, I think he was listed as a third baseman. But if you started digging in and reading scouting reports, you quickly learned that that was a position he was trying to play, but it wasn't necessarily a position he was going to play in the future. And the more I learned about Molloy, the more I realized he is one of those guys that has an extreme amount of pressure on his bat in order to play. Because the threshold to play at first base or to be an everyday DH as you're breaking into the league is really high. His first two starts in the big leagues have both come as the DH. For now, the Tigers have that luxury of just seeing what happens. And they should, because Justin Henry Molloy has nothing left to prove at AAA. He's run an OBP above 400 each of the last two seasons at Toledo. The big question will be the swing and miss. Can top-level pitching push that strikeout rate up above 30%? If that begins to happen, you lose a little bit of average, lose a bit of OBP, and then you have this kind of no defensive value player who maybe isn't getting to his power right away. How patient are they going to be? So it's like, it's a guy I'm rooting for, but I know that this is even, it's a more difficult situation than what Norby has for the Orioles, but for completely different reasons. The Tigers are looking for sources of offense. So I think Molloy can string together two or three good weeks and earn himself an opportunity pretty far into the summer in the process. But if it's a rough start for him and Torkelson goes down and mashes at Toledo, kind of gets his swing right, they could pretty quickly send Malloy back down and put Torque right back where he was.
Yeah, and you figure we'll see how Torkelson responds, a number one overall pick being sent down to AAA. He hit 31 home runs last year, and they're not going to give him till the All-Star break. I don't know. I guess they know it better than I would. But Justin Henry Malloy for the Tigers definitely has an opportunity. I wish him success because that Detroit Tigers team needs a spark, 100%. So good luck to him. So those are two call-ups. I think the two hottest names for call-ups that are out there, as I call Hope Springs Eternal call-ups. But here's a guy I wanted to ask you about, Alec Burleson, outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals. Speaking of a team that needed a spark, and it looks like they got it. The Cardinals have since kind of turned their season around. Last 13 games, my boy Alec with a C, a 297 batting average, 5 home runs, even 2 stolen bases, and he's on Team Hefty Boy like I am. So I'm proud of him for hustling out 2 stolen bases. So, Derek, Nupar's out. Tommy Edman, I don't know what the deal is with him. What do you think about Alec Burleson? Is this a flash in the pan, or does he got some juice?
I think he's got a little bit of juice. I mean, I think the Nupar injury is probably going to sideline him longer than the first time around. It's kind of related to the oblique rib stuff that he was dealing with earlier in the year. And a lot of times if we see someone go back on the IL with something that bothered them previously, we can add more time to the expected absence. And Burleson is another one of those players. He's really, you know, bat first and defense is kind of fringy, but the role is there for him right now. I think he's probably a better fantasy player than a real-life player. We haven't seen great walk rates consistently up and down in the minor leagues. We see them occasionally, but he doesn't strike out a lot, hits the ball hard enough to do some damage. And I think if we could just see him lift the ball with more consistency, and he's starting to do that this year, we will see that power kind of play up all season long. It's probably like a 30 home run ceiling. He's on like a low to mid-20s home run pace so far. But I think his playing time is much, much safer now that Nupar's back on the shelf.
Yeah, he's kind of exciting. He's a lefty power bat. If you look at a StatCast page, it's what you would imagine a lefty power bat looks like. Red in all the places, and then you get to whiff and stuff like that, and it's blue. But, hey, if you want 20 home runs from the waiver wire, it could be Alec Burleson as the Cardinals try to turn it around. I can't believe I buried the lead here, but looking at my notes, I was like, I should have circled this one. Royce Lewis is back. Mm. He's back with a bang, literally, hit a home run, walked twice. So Royce Lewis, for the Minnesota Twins, right back in the action. So clearly he's a 10-team, 12-team. If somebody dropped him because of, you know, they just can't stand that many injured players. Obviously he's a rush to the waiver wire, but I was thinking about this. What do you think about letting Royce, you know, hit for a little while? And if you're in a keeper dynasty league, I might, in the immortal words of Duke Mortimer from Trading Places, sell. What do you think about Royce Lewis long term? You think you hold him and ride it or sell him?
I kind of think you want to just see what happens here. I mean, the per game numbers have been excellent. It's just been two devastating ACL injuries that have cost him a lot of time. And it's been basically a half season now that he's spent in Minnesota, split over parts of 3 years now. 315, 375, 577 hitter, 19 homers. He's 6-for-7 as a base stealer. They may be careful with him in Minnesota as far as not having him take off as much as he could. I mean, two ACL tears. Why risk it, right? Some of the concerns we're probably going to have about Ronald Acuna Jr. once he's back eventually, too. Is he going to run as much as he did off of one ACL tear? Really big question to sort of figure out. I think many people have a health grade F on Royce Lewis. And when players have that because of devastating injuries, you don't usually get fair value in trades in long-term leagues. And I think you can maybe lean into the fact that you'll get more a year or two from now if you're right than you will right now or a month or so from now if he continues to do what he's done on a per game basis up to this point. But really exciting player to have back, and I think that changes the AL Central race a lot, having Lewis in the heart of that Minnesota lineup.
Yeah, I love Royce Lewis. He's so cool. I mean, his name is Royce. They named a luxury British car line manufacturing after this man. That's how cool he is, and he's super talented. He just can't stay healthy, which, you know, that's unfortunate. But I wanted to switch over to a couple pitchers, because one guy that I really like is, and this is nothing new, but Cade Povich is one of the Baltimore Orioles pitching prospects, and they've got another guy named Chase McDermott. And so as Dean Kramer and some other players, John Means, have been put on the IL. They've been putting Irvin in the starting rotation, and then I believe Albert Suarez may be their number five. But I read a report today that Cade Povich, who's a five-pitch mix guy, had good results in the minors, was put on the Orioles taxi squad. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, I think it's a small group of traveling players that are available, but they're not necessarily like officially on the roster. I think that's how it works at this point. Usually it's around double headers, though, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think it's something you just do unless you've got the extra game and you need that flexibility. But they don't have a double header on the calendar this week, so I'm guessing it's because Kyle Bradish is going to move back from Thursday to Friday, and I don't know, just a way of designated that he's like ready to be there ahead of time, which is really strange. We didn't used to have this. You used to just find out that he's there or he's not. The reporters would show up in the clubhouse. There'd be a nameplate over the locker for a player that wasn't there the day before, and they'd get on their phones and tweet it out and say, Cade Povich has a locker here, and everybody would say, great, Cade Povich is up. I think he's pitching Thursday based on everything they're saying right now. And I think it's interesting because, you know, it is more of a depth repertoire than this guy has a nasty slider or a nasty fastball. And I think pitchers like this can be a little underrated sometimes. It's like command with four or five pitches. That seems like it works pretty well. It might not be the profile of someone we're drafting as a top 100 pick someday, but in a league where we're desperate for pitching, we're putting this guy in a good park with all the changes they made in Baltimore, on a team that scores a lot of runs and that has a decent bullpen. Like, that's kind of everything you're looking for in a decent pickup. So even compared to some of the bats we talked about earlier, I kind of like Povich as a relatively inexpensive waiver pickup because they have a need there with the John Means setback and subsequent Tommy John surgery. And it's just been a rough little stretch for injury news for this Orioles rotation.
Yeah, I dream on it. I dream on Cade Povich. I have Kyle Bradish 2023 dreams. Nobody knew who Kyle Bradish was last year at this time. He came up and dominated. So hopefully Cade Povich can be that guy. So he's on the taxi squad. So I kind of think two things when I read that. I was like, well, I wonder, you know, because they're not on the active roster, so they're not allowed to come in the clubhouse. So they literally get like a limo and like drive it around the stadium, you know, like at the very end of Michael Clayton. And they just keep driving around and it's just waiting for somebody to get hurt. And then if nobody gets hurt, then they just say, okay, never mind, guys, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, kind of like a callback, like you're an actor and you're trying to get a callback or something. So, but yeah, he definitely is legit. So Cade Povich is a good stash, I think, because I want any player on the Orioles, really, pitcher or hitter.
Yeah, good another, player development.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that's Mike Elias, right? Wasn't he from the Houston organization?
Yeah, they got a couple other people from that front office too. And you think about some of the pop-up guys we've seen over the years that they weren't highly coveted prospects. Maybe they were fringe top 100 guys. Like the Astros did well in that regard. And I think the Orioles have really been kind of showing us in these last couple of seasons they have that organizational ability too.
They're so stacked. Being an Orioles fan right now is exciting and so much fun. So that's Cade Povich. Keep your eye on him. He's on the taxi squad. He and Danny DeVito, Kaufman. What was his name? The actor that did the voice.
On Taxi.
Yeah, he was on the show Taxi, you know, which is really relevant to this day and age. Andy Kaufman, I think that was his name. But another pitcher to keep your eye on is, well, if you need saves, looks like Andre Munoz got hit last night while he's trying to cover home plate. And after the game, the manager, Scott Servais, said that it re-aggravated an issue he was always that he's had. So you're like, if you're Andre Munoz's owner, I think you have to go pick up Ryan Stanek in that situation. What do you think? Is Ryan Stanek the next closer up in Seattle?
Yeah, they've kind of used him as that other source of saves a little bit. The good thing with Stanek is he's got a career low walk rate right now. And even last season, I think that was the previous career low compared to double-digit walk rates he had throughout his time in the big leagues before that. So I think he's more of like a third or fourth tier closer, so long as he has the job, because he's not a 35-40% strikeout rate guy, right? He's not elite in that regard, but opportunities everything. And if you look at the standings in rotisserie leagues right now, saves are generally bunched up a lot near the middle. So even a handful of saves could make a pretty big difference.
Oh, that's always true, because Edwin Diaz went out. Josh Hader isn't really banging out the saves much anymore. Unless you have like Class A or something like that, you could always use a backup. And also kind of like playing keep away from other managers that need saves. Like, go pick him up. Like, they don't get to have saves. I want all the saves. So Ryan Stanek, and that's Ryan RYNE. So you know he's good. Like the Cubs player, Ryan
Sandberg.
Sandberg, that's it. Anyone named Ryan that spells it RYNE is bound to be talented. So I would go pick up Ryan Stanek for Seattle. Speaking of Seattle, if we can recheck in to the secret life of DVR, Derek Van Riper, more secrets clouded in mystery, his future is. Mr. Van Riper has had a long-standing, heated, passionate love affair with this player, Victor Robles. A deep, dark secret from Mr. DVR's past, who has resurfaced like an old girlfriend following you on Facebook, DMs you at 1 a.m. Hey, thinking about you. That's what happened to DVR when Victor Robles got picked up by the Seattle Mariners. So, DVR, what say you? Are we back? Are we back in love? Are we rekindling the Victor Robles flames?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
So I'm at the point now where it's kind of like never Victor Robles. I learned my lesson coming out of 2019. That was the year he had the 17 homers, 28 steals. He was 22. It looked like he was going to be a multi-category star, right? He's going to be maybe a Starling Marte type fantasy player for the next 8 to 10 years. Didn't happen. And it was so convincing in 2019, which, you remember, the baseball was a little juiced that year. I think that season made Victor Robles believe he was more of a power hitter than he actually is. and nothing's really gone right for him since. And I think if he was the kind of guy that just made good swing decisions, occasionally ran into a homer, and just tried to get on base, kind of spray the ball over the field, come up with like a 270, 280 average, come up with a nice OBP, play great defense in center field, he'd be great, like in his own way. And in this environment where stolen bases are basically free, maybe he'd be a 40 to 50 steals player. Like, that's also possible. But I've seen so much bad contact and so many bunts. He doesn't want to swing the bat, Britton. Like, of all the things you could do with a bat, bunting is like the least interesting thing. And he loves to bunt. And I think that alone has just broken my spirit. That has ended my love affair with Victor Robles and has made me very bitter. And I think the other hard thing, like, Seattle for righties is a brutal place to hit. Teoscar Hernandez talked about it after his year there. Like, there's something with the batter's eye. The outfield wall in center field there is at a slight angle. So there's like a depth perception issue, I guess, trying to pick up the ball. And we've seen a lot of right-handed hitters over the years struggle in that ballpark. It's tough for power too, but I don't know. I think of all the places he could have gone and maybe got that flame burning again, sending me that 1 a.m. text, Seattle wasn't it, right? It was going to be like the Dodgers. The Dodgers need some help in the outfield right now. They have fixed hitters with less foundational skills than Victor Robles. So I'm happy he's getting another opportunity, but I'm not chasing Victor Robles everywhere.
Yeah, Victor Robles had so much potential, power, speed. But now he goes to a place that literally saps all that potential. It's Seattle. It's a tough place to hit. But on the flip side, he is one Dominic Canzone injury away from probably full-time outfield, plate appearances. And if you need steals, you may want to keep an eye on Victor Robles. Those old flames, Die Hard, DVR, those first loves. Sheryl Crow wrote a song about it. The first cut is the deepest.
Yes, it's true. My advice for anybody who has the ex that will send them a message at random hours and lead you to a bad, bad place, just put the name on your phone as destroy this phone. So that way if the text pops up, the instructions are above the message. You read that where the name should be and you destroy the phone and you don't respond to the message.
You got it right. You gotta text back who dis, and that just cut it off. Cut them off. It's over. All right. Thank you, DVR. That's the last deep, dark, secret that we were going to expose.
I don't believe you
on the show today. Thank you for being a good sport. So the last topic I wanted to talk to you about is, so now is the perfect time to pick up those buy low players, 10 team, especially in 10 team, 12 team, when they're, you know, decent players on the waiver wire. I love 12 team because I like it. I like a little bit of action on the waiver wire, whereas 15 team, you know, there's just nothing there. But you can get trades done in 12 team because I guarantee you the owner, and when I say I'm pointing the finger at myself, I'm sick of Austin Riley. Like, I can't take this anymore. I love Austin Riley. I drafted him thinking he's going to bat second or third for the Braves. He had a great year last year. He's like 26, 27. This is the year. And I don't know if it's injuries. I know he's back from the IL, but oh man, he's got like Sadon Rafael has 7 home runs and Austin Riley's got 3. Like, I can't do it anymore, but I also know he's going to bounce back, as all the Braves are eventually. But what do you think? Is Austin Riley a buy low, or do you see something there that's just like, yeah, just drop him and go get, you know, Ryan Mountcastle or something? What do you think?
I think he's a buy low and definitely somebody I'd want to keep. I mean, you're trying to make up ground in the power and run production categories. I think Riley's one of the best players that could help you do that. If you've been rostering him to this point, especially the run where he was not playing, but he wasn't on the IL, that was pretty frustrating in May. It was like a almost 2 week stretch, I think, where he didn't play a game. You're in that position. You need that power and run production. I think this is a lineup that hasn't really found its stride, and it can still do that even with the Acuna injury. Marcell Ozuna has been their by far best hitter to this point, but Matt Olson's going to be better today forward probably than he has been up to this point. Austin Riley, as long as he's healthy, should be better today forward than he has been to this point. I look at the underlying numbers. I don't see a lot that's changed. He's still hitting the ball hard. He's not chasing pitches outside the zone more than he ordinarily does. He's walking and striking out at pretty normal rates. Like, this just seems like bad luck. We've also started to wonder like how much the early season lack of power from a lot of players is the result of a different batch of baseballs, how much of it is the result of some kind of unseasonably cold weather that's hung around deeper into the spring. I think a lot of those things are at least helpful in trying to comprehend it when you don't see something else that's wrong. So I'm in on Austin Riley. I think he's going to be great in the second half of the season, or from today's the middle third and the last third of the season, the rest of the season, however you want to describe it. I think Austin Riley's going to be just fine. He's still probably a top five third baseman. And I think you're right, though. We're at the point in the year people are frustrated enough to actually make a trade. End of April, early May, that's not necessarily the case. They still kind of have that attachment to the players they drafted. But now I think your confidence can be shaken a little bit more because you see 50, 55, 60 games. And that's a pretty decent sample to draw some conclusions. And unfortunately, some people are going to draw the wrong conclusion, I think, about Riley.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those deals where it's gut check time with Austin Riley. And everything screams, get me out of this. The Braves are all wrong. Acuna's out. Nobody's hitting. Something's wrong. I don't want to deal with it. You know, Ryan Mountcastle, you know, some CI that may be on the waiver wires out there hitting bombs and getting hot. So it's tough, but I think DVR is 100% correct. Yeah, hang on, because remember Spencer Torkelson last year? Like, he had a terrible 2 months. And people were dropping him, 10-team, 12-teams. And then somebody picked him up in a couple leagues, I'm sure. And then he went on to hit 31 home runs, I think. I think that's Austin Riley's future too, or at least that's what I'm hoping for, because you never know. It could just be a down year, but I'd hang on to Austin Riley for the Braves. But what's starting to become a down year every year, except one, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for the Toronto Blue Jays. Remember when he came up and it was all blatakata? Like, this guy is going to change the world. And then the Toronto Blue Jays had that one great season where they played some of their games at Dunedin and some in Buffalo. Like, I don't remember. I think he hit 41 home runs that year. And it's kind of been ground ball city ever since. I don't know why, because he was never a ground ball hitter in his career. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for the Blue Jays, he's also in that Austin Riley kind of like, this isn't what I signed up for. What do you think? Is there hope for Vlad too?
There is. He's still 25 years old. It's hard to believe, right? There are so many players who are just getting their first season out of the way, or maybe they're in their second full season at this age. And the expectations on Vlad Jr. have probably been unfair ever since we knew he was going to play professional baseball, because of who his dad was and because of the tools. And even the first year, I remember before he debuted, the steamer projections came out during first pitch Arizona.
I remember that.
He had like a top 10 hitter projection by steamer. And we were all just like, what is this? Like, we don't see players come through the minors and have projections like that. So I think it's a combination of different things. Some of those things are completely out of his control. I think my working theory for Vlad Jr. is that he has the curse of a good hit tool. If you can hit just about everything, you're probably hitting pitches that you shouldn't hit, because if you work the count more, waited for something you could hit further, something you could pull, something you could lift, then you wouldn't have a 52% ground ball rate. And I would think if me, guy that doesn't play professional baseball, sees it and thinks it, that Vlad Jr., who is really good at baseball, would try to make some kind of adjustment. I mean, the contact quality is still there. And he's chasing fewer pitches outside the zone than ever. So I think that, to me, is a little indicator that maybe he is trying to be more selective, right? I think back to Pablo Sandoval was probably like the first player when we collectively all cared more about O-swing and guys who were bad ball hitters, and we had a way of quantifying it. Like Pablo Sandoval had that for a long time. But Vlad Jr. has a broader offensive foundation than Sandoval does. He's more patient. There's always been a decent walk rate. I mean, a 10% career walk rate for Vlad Jr. That's good. Like he's not swinging at everything, because if he was swinging at everything, that number would be lower. It's just like, is there a season as good as 2021 still in his bat? That's the part that I wrestle with the most. I think if you set your expectations to 2022's power as a 32 home run season instead of 48 homers, and you put a good average next to it and nice run production, that's a really good player. It's not a first round fantasy talent, but it's a guy you'd like to have on your team year in and year out. I think that's probably where the ceiling needs to be for Vlad Jr. at this point. And I wonder too, like, what else is going on in Toronto? He's not the only struggling hitter relative to our expectations there. Is it a philosophy problem? Is it the changes they made to that ballpark last year that's caused a bunch of problems for hitters there? Like, it seems like something else might be going on that goes beyond Vlad Jr.
Yeah, maybe it's a clubhouse thing. I think it's the manager's fault, Schneider. That dude is bad vibes, like embodied in a human being, like just everything about him. Like, hey man, why don't you smile or something for a minute? Like, just do something. You need to do something to shake up this boohoo attitude up in Toronto. And I don't know if he's the guy to do it, but yeah, Bo Bichette too. That's another name I was going to bring up. He's kind of like the same path of Vladimir Jr. is like had that kick a season a couple years ago, and then last year he got to 20 home runs, so that's good. But that's not what you're hoping for with Bo Bichette. You want Bo Bichette to be a superstar, you know, like a Francisco Lindor, you know, 30-30 kind of guy. I mean, Lindor's not a big guy either, you know. I mean, but he gets it done. I was always kind of – it's weird. It's like I wanted Vladimir Guerrero to kind of be like Devers, you know, like a 30-plus home run RBI machine, and then you've got Bichette hitting second, like a Lindor, prime Lindor, or, you know, or Marcus Semien or something. And it's just not happening. And when you watch him play, you don't get those vibes anymore. But Bo Bichette's a little bit different because he's always had the hit, you know, always had the hit tool. But it's another tough season, and I know he's young, but if you drafted him in redraft, oh man, I don't know. Davis Schneider is having a better season. I know that's crazy talk, but what do you see with Bo Bichette? Is he buy low?
Less so than Vlad for me. I think there's a couple things about Bo Bichette that are weird. So I mentioned the curse of a good hit tool. I think Bo Bichette pairs that with less strike zone judgment than Vlad. So it's even more detrimental to his power output. I mean, look at the O-swing percentages from Bo Bichette. He's always been this way. Even when he's been good, it's going to be in the 40% range, and that runs high. Players like that tend to be really volatile. They can run extremely hot. They can run extremely cold. I think we're in kind of a prolonged cold stretch right now for Bo Bichette. A lot of what he does is drive the ball to the opposite field. We've learned in recent years that opposite field barrels are not nearly as valuable as pulled barrels. So I think that also is another thing that kind of keeps that power more in check. And the other part of his game that just irritates me, how does he only have 9 stolen bases since the start of last season? We're talking about 192 games. He's 9-for-13 as a base stealer. I know at the time when he broke in, he went 25-for-26 with that massive 2021 season. People said, that's weird. He's not that fast. But we also know now that sprint speed, at least as it's measured by StatCast, isn't necessarily a clear indicator of the ability to steal bases. It measures something completely different. It doesn't even measure sprint speed on stolen bases. Those runs are not even part of that metric. I just think you can't come into this environment and basically be a 10 steal player in your mid-20s playing in the middle infield. That just doesn't work for me. Like, you can't sell me that as an elite early round player. So I've been wrong about Bo. I really liked him coming into the season. I thought the hamstring injury last year, I thought that was the reason why he didn't take off and run more a year ago. He was only 5 for 8 last season. Doesn't seem to be the case. I also wonder, too, does he need a change of scenery? Is he the guy that they're going to extend, or is he a guy they're going to trade? Because if the Blue Jays are underperforming at the deadline, I imagine there'd be a handful of teams out there that would look at him as some kind of middle infield upgrade.
Yeah, if you drafted Bo Bichette early, you're like, man, I wish I'd drafted another pitcher and gotten Anthony Volpe later. You know,
Tarek Skubal could have. I mean, like, I think Tarek Skubal's ADP versus Bo Bichette, you could have had Skubal pretty much in any draft where you took Bo.
I know, and of course, I didn't draft Tarek Skubal for the Tigers anywhere. Hey, I was looking at the Arizona. I don't know if you did this, but at the Arizona Fall League, I did a draft and hold set up by the NFBC people, and like Paul Spohr was in it, like Justin Mason, and it was a 50 round draft and hold with 15 teams. And I was looking at it the other day. I picked third, and I picked Julio Rodriguez. It went Acuna, Bobby Witt, and then Julio, and then Mookie Betts right behind me. And I was looking in the first round. The gentleman or a gentlewoman, I honestly can't remember, that picked 15th, drafted Aaron Judge and Juan Soto.
That worked.
And I looked at his last name is Slezak, which I wanted to give him a shout out. Like I didn't check where he was in the standings. I assume it's number one or number two overall. But can you imagine when you're drafting early like that and you get Aaron Judge and Juan Soto in your 15 team fantasy league? I drafted Soto some places. I didn't draft Aaron Judge anywhere. So, you know, full disclosure, because of his toe or something. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. But what about you, DVR? Did you see this Aaron Judge resurgence?
I was afraid once we got the news, I think it was in March, that he had an abdominal injury, that new thing that popped up this spring. I wasn't as worried about the toe. People got worried about the toe because they saw that report that he was going to do some preventative maintenance on it for the rest of his career. And I think reports like that are unintentionally misleading because I think we all sort of underestimate the amount of preventative maintenance professional athletes have to do just to stay at their present level. Right. So I just kind of bailed on Judge because my philosophy was, you know, why take on risk with your first round pick in a year when there's probably 20 players I like that should be inside the top 15. And then what a disaster call that's been. There's been so many players in that group that have underperformed so far. We'll see if they can turn it around. But I never doubted the skills. Aaron Judge has a barrel rate above 25% 3 years running. I don't know if we're ever going to see that again. He's in one of the most hitter-friendly parks in baseball. And they added one of the absolute best hitters in the game to the lineup around him. So they took a good lineup. They made it better. And look, are we going to make the same mistake next year? Is Aaron Judge not going to be a top five pick? Let's just prorate what he's doing right now for the rest of the season. Are we going to say, Aaron Judge doesn't steal enough bases and he's 33. So give me a 24-year-old player that's done it one time and I'm going to do that instead. Like I think people tend to play that way.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm disappointed I don't have more Judge. I had a lot of Judge 2 years ago and it was probably my best year playing fantasy baseball. So he's like one of the few Yankees I actually really like because of fantasy stuff that's happened over the years.
Speaking of Yankees, Gerrit Cole looks like he's did he have a rehab start yesterday or the day before? I could have sworn I saw him walking angrily out of a Triple-A tunnel or something with his, you know, very serious pregame face. But Gerrit Cole, the ace of the Yankees. Wow. So if they get him back soon, if you're in a 10-team league, he may be out on the waiver wire. When's a good time to nab Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, I mean, now would be the time if you're in a league where he was cut. It seems like maybe a full rehab assignment is on the table, but he went 3 1/3. It was double A for that first turn out there, 3 1/3 scoreless, missed a ton of bats, didn't walk anybody. I mean, like, what else could you want? I think Gerrit Cole can still be a top five starting pitcher. I actually have a league where it was an auction. I spent a ton on Strider. I think in the first 3 minutes, I spent money on Strider, Tatis, and Hader. I was like, I'm getting K's, I'm getting saves, and I'm getting a multi-category bat that I think is going to be awesome. And then I had to sit for an hour before I got any more players because I spent half my budget. I got Gerrit Cole for, I think, $8 or $9 because there was a lot of uncertainty in March about the extent of his arm injury. They were kind of vague about the diagnosis at first. We didn't know if it was going to turn into like a Tommy John situation. Fortunately, everything seems to be more like nerve related and it seems to have healed up pretty well. But having kind of Gerrit Cole in your back pocket on a team where you lost Strider gives me some hope. It's all about having hope, Britton. That's better than anything I'm going to find on the waiver wire. I mean, if I gave you an opportunity to place a legal wager with me, I'm not an odds maker, but let's just a friendly wager. Who's sure. going to be better? From the time he returns, is Gerrit Cole going to be more valuable than every single pitcher that comes off the waiver wire? Or will any one pitcher out-earn him in 5x5?
You got to figure Gerrit Cole, because when he comes back, he's going to be fired up and ready to go, because look what he's on his team. Now, it's my belief that starting pitchers are the least rah-rah team guys on a Major League Baseball team. You know, they're focused on what they're doing, not really anything else. But it'd be hard not to get rah-rah, especially if you're a veteran like Cole, but it would hard not to get pumped up every start when you look down that lineup sheet and you see Juan Soto and Volpe and Aaron Judge. And then you got the veterans, and I know this isn't a Yankees podcast, but it is kind of exciting. I'm just a regular baseball fan. I don't have a particular team I root for or anything. But it is always fun, I think, to have the Yankees, the big bad Yankees, coming around with Gerrit Cole on there. And it's always nice, too, when they make the playoffs and get eliminated.
You're right. You just want them to get there so you can watch them lose. Like, that's the main thing. Yeah, you want to see, kind of like we saw a few years ago, you want to see a guy like Mike Brasso homer off of, it was Aroldis Chapman, I think was the exact homer, you know, Rays Yankees. You want the underdog scenario to play out and for Yankees fans to have to extend their streak of futility for one more year. In futility, I mean, they won in 2009, right? Like, that's not that long ago. I root for a team that's never won a World Series, so I don't feel bad for Yankees fans. But I agree with you. I mean, I think when the Yankees are good, especially, it gives you something to root for. They're fun players that you want to watch because they're just great players, or you've got the enemy that everyone can root against outside of New York.
I remember that Mike Brasso at bat when Chapman threw at his head, literally threw at his head, and with Brasso just and then knocked the next one out. Now that's a moment to stick with you, Mike Brasso. Like, I don't know what happened the rest of your career, but that that's called one shining moment right there. But just one more quick thing, DVR, and we'll get out of here. It's coming up on an hour. But so you mentioned your team, the Brewers. Super, super exciting. Willy Adames has turned all that potential into actual stardom and success. Do you have any inside information for the listeners regarding the Milwaukee Brewers? And I know Rhys Hoskins recently came back, got the weirdest, biggest standing ovation of any player in Philadelphia history. I was like, I knew he played there, but I mean, was it that big a deal? I don't know. Maybe you know something about that.
I think there was a pretty strong connection there between Hoskins and the fans, and I think we saw that on full display. And then I know it was the second game of that series, he came up in a spot that could have probably put the game away for the Brewers and struck out. So you know, one of those moments that was set up to be turn the hero into a villain, and he didn't quite execute it. It's too bad, but. Willy Adames looking like kind of a different player this year because he's actually stealing more bases. He's on pace for a career high. He's probably going to get to 18, 20 bags on his current pace. And the other thing that he's done that's really impressive is that he's cut the K rate down a little bit, right? Even when he was really good in 2022, popped the 31 homer, did it with a little bit of a high K rate. So everything is clicking for him. Adames is the kind of player that I think he's got beyond what he does for fantasy purposes. It seems like he's really a clubhouse leader there. You can see it when you watch them. He's kind of an infectious smile, always kind of messing around with everybody on both sides, and a fun player to watch every day. Kind of one of those guys, like everybody's got a team they root for where your team added a player, and at the time you're like, okay, cool, we got this guy. And then you realize later how impactful that was. I think Adames was like that. They needed a shortstop when they traded for him, but I don't think anybody expected him to be quite this good and quite this important to the franchise in a stretch where they continue to have a lot of success.
One of the biggest sleeper surprises is Willy Adames, man. He's really taken that team and taken it forward, but also one of the best catcher hitters is Contreras, and also the Tommy Pham stopper. But I mean, you have to have no fear if you deal with Tommy Pham. No, I mean, even his post-game press conference, I was like, I'm this guy's about to blow. Like, he's a little kettle, the steam's coming out. I'm like, I don't want to be anywhere around this, you know, 24 Jack Bauer time bomb when this thing goes off. But
Yeah. Tommy Pham, I mean, he said it himself. He's preparing for fights in the offseason. So definitely not the guy that you want to get into a collision with on the field. But yeah, William Contreras hitting like a star again this year. I think everybody wondered when he debuted as a part-time player with Atlanta, like what was going to happen with more playing time? Was he going to correct some of the swing and miss problems? What kind of defensive player was he going to be? When the Brewers snuck into that trade between the A's and Braves and came away with William Contreras, that was a little bit different than the Willy Adames trade. That was one where almost immediately the reaction around here was, oh, they did something really sharp. They got in there and solved an area of need with a player that can get a lot better. And their organizational strength in Milwaukee is taking guys that are not necessarily good defenders behind the plate and making them very good defenders. Something that Charlie Green, their catching instructor, has been there for like a decade. They do that exceptionally well. I think that's part of their secret sauce for how their pitching's good too, right? You got good catching, good defense all around. That goes a long way towards making kind of average-looking pitchers play up.
Well, one day, hopefully, you know, in the not too distant future, when I retire, I'm going to go up to all the baseball parks. I've been to about 10, but I want to go to Milwaukee. Because I know it's not called Miller Lite Park anymore, but it's always going to be Miller Lite Park to me because Body by Miller Lite. And then I'm going to have a bunch of Miller Lights and get on that slide down and go to get arrested and, you know, get out like a year later. But it's all worth it because I'll have the best Milwaukee Brewers story ever. All right,
good story,
Derek. Yeah, we'll see. My wife and kids will be so proud.
Well, if she Venmos me the money, I'll make sure to bail you out.
Oh, thanks, I appreciate it. I'm pretty sure she wouldn't Venmo anybody anything if I do something that stupid. But DVR, man, I so much appreciate you coming on. I know that like this is your off day, and it's just so I'm so grateful and appreciative. Thank you for taking the time. It's great talking to you. Please follow Derek Van Riper. It's Derek, D-E-R-E-C-K Van Riper. It's all one word, no weird spaces or anything like that on X. And I'm sure people are familiar with Rates and Barrels, but if you would give everybody real quick what your schedule is with Eno.
Yeah, we're every day except for Wednesday, or every weekday except for Wednesdays. Episodes usually drop in the afternoon. Our Friday episode is actually a live stream with Trevor May, former big leaguer.
Oh, so that's right.
1 o'clock Eastern on our YouTube page if you want to check it out live. And we, of course, post the podcast version of that later in the afternoon. So, yeah, love to see anybody out there on Friday in the live hive.
Go check it out on Friday. You've heard Derek's deepest, darkest secrets for his secret life. But we're going to let him go now because he's a good sport. Thank you, Derek.
Thanks, good Britain. One. Take care.
Yeah. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.